You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 15 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from my apartment in Bromfontein Werf. Live shows back on Friday. Today on the show, Mia Kruger, US earnings season, Magda Vidiska, the Signia Oxford Sciences Innovation Fund, and Omnia CEO on how to turn around a business. The show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: demand for Kruger Rands is through the roof. And an opinion piece in Business Day, Tito Mboweni, structural reforms, not spending, are the best way to achieve growth. Morning markets, US green, S&P up 1.3%, NASDAQ up 0.9%. Asia also green, Tokyo and Sydney both 1.3% higher. Commodities, green, gold 18.11, Rand stronger at 16.71, and top 40 opening call for about 1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
Chatting with Mia Kruger, she's a director at Kruger International. Mia, appreciate your time this very cold early morning. Let's quickly touch medical stocks. Moderna, if I'm pronouncing it correct, a stock that shares now up 400% year to date. Analysts are talking about $5 billion a year in COVID-19 vaccine sales. That's very much a maybe. If we step back, your take on medical, there's a pro and a con. The pro for healthcare stocks broadly is aging population, we get that. The flip side, of course, is governments and you know, price increases and therefore potential regulation. How do you folks at Kruger International look at healthcare?
Yes, like you say, Simon, it's a pretty sort of tricky minefield out there. You need to consider so many aspects, despite the fact that we've got medical definitely now in the forefront with the coronavirus. And Moderna, as you mentioned, they came out with a pretty good phase one study, which we know is so early on. Mm-hmm. And we've also seen some fast tracking with Pfizer, etc., with some testing. It's still a long way to get to the vaccine. We've seen over many years of watching the medical stocks and also being invested in some of them, that some of these trials can take very long, and the initial studies do look good, and then we're very disappointed with the second round and so on. Mm-hmm. So the government regulations around getting a medicine approved is the one side, but then the trials and then sort of the phases in the trial studies sometimes disappoint as well, and people get too optimistic very early on. So medical stocks are definitely a very long-term view and a long-term investment. So we like companies where the mix is rather towards stronger medicines that already earn quite a strong income stream, and then with good prospects in the pipeline. Also, the larger companies are in a better position to buy out some of the smaller ones, and that's sort of also keeps us interested in some of the larger companies. But at this stage, not any specific ones that I'm considering buying.
Yeah, in essence, the COVID-19, and I'm not trying to be flippant here, if a company gets that and does get it through all stages and does earn some revenue, that's going to be great. But as you point out, at this point, it's really too early in the process to sort of place bets on as to which it'll be.
Yes, absolutely. It's quite very early on. We've seen so many names in the media the last 3 weeks, or the last 2 months, really, with people speculating about who's going to be the first to have the vaccine ready. But still, the vaccine is still some time off.
Yeah. Earnings season kicked off in the US. Of course, this is now earnings, including some of the lockdown in the US, naturally hard lockdown from April. Seen some banks, I mean, Wells Fargo, for example, $2.4 billion loss. Although I note they still got a dividend. They've cut it to only 10 cents. Is there anything in particular you're looking for? I mean, the results are going to be ugly. That's not going to be any surprise. I suppose it's level of ugliness, perhaps.
Absolutely. I think the interesting fact was last night we saw the S&P and the Dow jump, and mm-hmm. the Nasdaq was actually the laggard. And it seemed like there was some selling in some of the tech stocks and into some rotation into some of the cyclicals. So there was some selling of Amazon and Netflix last night. But the interesting thing about the banks that already reported, we saw JP Morgan yesterday that came out with a surge of nearly 80% in their trading revenue.
Yeah.
And that was sort of came to the forefront, even though they didn't beat on the earnings, the share price was still up strongly on that. And it seems like they and Citigroup also came out yesterday, had a very strong jump in their trading costs. It's something that we've been talking about and seeing in the market with the Robin Hoods, et cetera, mm-hmm. and also with the big banks. But all three of the banks, Wells Fargo, Citi, and JP Morgan, disappointed on the earnings side, on the revenue side yesterday. And Citigroup and Wells Fargo was down quite a bit. Wells Fargo is still trading at some of its lowest points this year. So it doesn't look too good for the banks. They're making big provisions for write-offs, and we think that's going to be the trend this week going forward. It's just going to be interesting to see how long the market likes the story going forward.
Yeah, and how much sort of leeway, wiggle room they're going to give them. Bringing it back home, Sun International announced a sale of an asset yesterday to the Mana Hotel Group, and Mana's the name, it's not me being disparaging, in the Seychelles. They sold it for almost $28 million. US dollars. In essence, there's almost, I mean, it's really tough out there for pretty much any business, particularly the gaming and leisure industry. But the idea of perhaps cleaning up a portfolio, getting rid of some of your smaller assets, sort of paying off some debt, some of the companies might actually come out of this crisis, notwithstanding the hit to revenue, but with better looking portfolios and debt profiles. Is that a fair comment?
Yes, absolutely. I think I've seen the same sort of and made the same conclusion, Simon, is that we look at these companies and many of them coming out with rights issues. I mean, one of the things we heard from Sun International is that they're going to have quite a deep discount on mm-hmm. their rights issue of 34%, if I'm not mistaken, from Monday's price. So they are not only looking at issuing shares, so a stronger balance sheet won't just be the selling of assets and cleaning up the balance sheet, but it will also be driven on strongly by investors taking part and supporting the companies. And like you say, that will definitely help with the debt profiling. It will definitely help with shoring up the balance sheet and getting rid of sort of some assets that really don't fit into these portfolio so well anymore. But it will have to be driven by the support of the investors already, and they will have to dig into their pockets and support the companies financially if they want to see them come out stronger on the other side. And then the other side to this would be the fact that it still remains to be seen how they will be weathering the storm and how this will be impacting them, especially in South Africa, where we see such a negative effect with the tourism industry. Luckily for Sun International, they're quite slanted to the casino operators, mm-hmm. which has gotten the green light.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's still very, very tough out there. We mustn't kid ourselves about that. And shareholders are going to have to dig deep to keep the companies going. We'll leave that there. Mia Kruger, Director, Kruger International. Always appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Magda Wojcicka. She's CEO of Signia, well known for their low-cost products. But today we want to talk the Signia Oxford Sciences Innovation Fund. Magda, appreciate your time. Before we get into the OSI, I'm going to take a step back. Oxford, obviously people know Oxford University in the UK, rated number one globally for research. What happens here is the Oxford Sciences Innovation PLC, they're effectively getting 25% of all rights to past and present IP that comes out of the university, and they're looking to assist in turning that IP into businesses from startup stage, from venture capital, ultimately to a profitable business.
Indeed, Simon. So OSI itself, Oxford Sciences Innovation, was set up as a collaboration between some very large asset managers in the UK and Oxford University in order to do exactly that, to commercialize the IP emerging out of Oxford, because, UK is so far behind in that kind of space, behind the US, in universities being able to benefit from the IP that is developed at universities themselves. Initially, there was £600 million injected into the company. And over the last 5 years, OSI has spun out 81 different companies out of Oxford University. One of those spin-outs being involved in the development of the Oxford vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine. It used to be, the shares in OSI were very, very tightly held because obviously the value of what you have in terms of the unique and exclusive deal with the University of Oxford cannot be replicated.
Yeah.
So no one was a seller. But last year, in response to that wave of assets moving out of active asset management into passive strategies, a couple of these active asset managers became forced sellers of literally everything that they had because of outflows. And, we used it as an opportunity to approach them and to buy the OSI shares from them.
I wondered how Signia had got in, because in all my digging, as you point out, incredibly tightly held, incredibly valuable, because universities, professors, students creating content, ideas, IP all the time. In essence, your Signia OSI fund has now got a fairly chunky stake in the OSI out of Oxford, and therefore reaping the benefits of not just the 81 businesses so far, but that pipeline of businesses to come.
100%. So Signia OSI Fund itself invests into Bravos Funds, which are private equity funds set up in Guernsey. And Bravos Funds invest in OSI shares as well as select spin-outs where we believe, the opportunities for growth are phenomenal. And there are a number of these businesses which, we believe can achieve the unicorn status within the next few years. But it's clearly that pipeline that is very, very exciting. So in terms of OSI itself, the company still has £360 million in cash on its balance sheet. So it can continue to deploy money. It doesn't need to raise capital. The idea behind OSI, in fact, is that it becomes a self-funding vehicle. So it will exit certain companies and hence, it will never necessarily need to raise funding again. So the acquisition of the shares was very fortuitous. Obviously, I'm not even for a second going to tell you that, I envisaged the COVID-19 crisis.
Sure.
I was just very excited over that whole field of healthcare, impact investing, technology, and, it's very, very strong in medical fields. So it's life sciences, number one in the world in life sciences, and number one in the world in artificial intelligence. So that convergence of IP is what actually attracted me to OSI. And I knew about OSI since its formation. But obviously, there was never an opportunity to acquire the shares until last year. And when I found out that certain managers were under pressure, approached them, I said, can we buy the shares? They said yes, and here we are today.
And OSI itself, it's obviously already got a track record. You talk of 81 businesses. It's kind of venture capital at one point, and it's got the £630 million, because obviously it's going to seed capital them. But because of the longevity, it's got multiple funds, and therefore it reduces the risk. If I go and invest into one startup, massive risk. If I invest into 100 startups, massively reduces the risk, notwithstanding, of course, this is Oxford IP, which probably helps. But it means I've kind of got VC, but maybe at a lower risk level?
Well, that's my view of it. That, just holding an OSI share, you are investing currently in, 80 different businesses, 81 different businesses in different stages of growth. So, we are now looking within the Bravos funds, we are currently looking at an opportunity where the company was spun out of Oxford 2016. It's currently valued, independently valued with, validating capital coming in at £450 million. Mm-hmm. So, some of those companies are no longer venture. They are privately held companies with very clear path towards, revenue generation, potential exit, potential IPOs. So there's huge amount of value in OSI that has been created. And just holding OSI is, equivalent to holding a very widely diversified portfolio of companies, be it unlisted.
So how does, as a South African investor, Bravos, this is offshore investing, I imagine. How does a South African investor get into the Cygnia OSI fund?
So Cygnia OSI fund itself is a South African product.
Okay.
It's an endowment policy. Mm-hmm. On this run by Cygnia Life, or issued by Cygnia Life. It's a daily unitized fund. You know, as an endowment, you are tied in for a period of 5 years, but, you know, they're usually ways of creating liquidity during the term of the fund. So you're not tied in for the entire 5 years. You can exit if you wish to exit. But it is an endowment policy, daily priced, and you can, you know, as an endowment, you can disinvest from the actual OSI itself or the OSI fund and invest in another Cygnia fund through the duration of your holding of that endowment, if you so wish. But daily unitized fund on the Cygnia Life license endowment policy.
Okay, and 5 years actually makes sense. It's probably a minimum investment for this sort of product. Listeners, if you're interested, get hold of Cygnia, get hold of your financial advisor. If they've never heard of it before, tell them to go chat to Cygnia. Magda Vajiska, CEO of Cygnia, really appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Omnia CEO Seelan Gobalsamy. He took over towards the end of last year as CEO, been at the company now almost 2 years. Really want to talk around the Omnia turnaround. We saw it in results to March, swung into a strong profit. That as our economy was already in recession and, of course, ahead of the global pandemic. Seelan, really appreciate your time today. I'm imagining in a turnaround scenario, getting a business back on track, and Omnia is a business with a lot of history, not knowing there's a problem, you'd be aware of that. It's deciding the route out. It's deciding the team to support you as to how to get out of the problem as a first step.
Agreed. Simon, thanks for having me. I think so many South African companies have gone through difficult patches, and Omnia has been around for 66 years, you know, an old South African stalwart. And, you know, disappointing to see where we found ourselves last year. But I think really great to see the strong medicine the board, the management administered into the company. We had to make some very tough decisions, you know, went to the market to do a 2 billion rand rights offer, mm-hmm. term out the debt and restructure the company. And I think it's a really great example of a number of parties working together in a synchronized fashion to stabilize the business and take Omnia back to where it should be.
I take your point on a number of parties. I mean, an overused word is sort of culture within a business, but that really is important. How do you get that culture into a team? A team that, you know, it must be really tough watching a 66-year-old business going through really difficult times to get them remotivated and you know, another cliche, singing from the same hymn sheet.
Yeah, Simon, very, very difficult. And I guess that's what, you know, all of us as leaders need to focus on. There's no way a board, a single leader, a single manager can turn a business around with 4,500 people. And businesses don't turn around quickly. You know, it takes time. I think the first thing is to demonstrate and to articulate the burning platform. So when people see that things are not great, when people understand that, I can assure you people run towards problems. People run towards solving them. You know, very few of human beings run away when there's a crisis. We have some who run away, but the majority run towards it. And I think it's been really pleasing to see how many people, you know, ran towards the problem, put their shoulder to the wheel, and did all of the necessary things needed. It has to start from the top, mm-hmm. you know. So I think mm-hmm. the Omnia board, you know, had to start that. It then filtered into the management team, the executive, and then into the next layers. There's still a lot of hard work we've got to do ahead of us, but you know, as you say, culture, the way we go about doing things, our behaviors, is what sets us on the path of this fix and stability that we've experienced.
And I take your point. You know, people, yeah, we don't shy away from problems. We typically take them head on. The challenge then, I suppose, is there needs to be absolute honesty from the board down, both to internal stakeholders, staff and the like, but external stakeholders, customers, suppliers, in the case of Omnia, shareholders. Without that absolute frank honesty, it's not, nothing's going to get done. It would be too easy to put a head in the sand and hide behind excuses.
Agreed. You know, so I think, you know, what we went through last year, March, April, May, you know, we were transparent. We were saying that we needed to establish a new capital structure. Granted, you know, mm-hmm. Shareholders were upset, staff were upset, stakeholders were upset. And that's the point when we needed to say, look, give us a little bit of time, you know, put in place a bridge loan, let us assess the situation, and we will tell you, you know, how we're going to get out of this. And I'm pleased to say that, you know, all listed entities need to be as transparent as they can be, you know, say things just the way they are. Mm-hmm. And it's a journey we're on, you know, so we will continue to do that. We will continue to provide the patient with the necessary medicine it needs, you know. So I remember last year when a number of stakeholders said, is the 2 billion enough? Do you need more? Do you need less? You know, and I guess all of these were fine balances, you know. And I heard you speak about it the other day. You know, very few companies do a rights offer and get through. You know, there's so many failures, mm-hmm. even after the rights offer. And what we've demonstrated is, you know, balancing all those fine issues to say, should we do more? Should we do less? How do we think about the balance sheet? You know, those difficult calls all today have demonstrated a level of stability that's come into our balance sheet. And it's great to see. I think we can all, you know, learn from that and continuously improve, including, you know, myself, the management team. There's always things we can always do better.
Yeah, I take that point. I mean, as you said, I mean, it was my big thing. Rights issues are fine as long as it's sort of a singular rather than a multiple. Last question. You've been an executive for decades. You're new to Omnia. You arrived late 2018 as an independent non-exec. You became the CFO and then last year the CEO. How important is a fresh set of eyes, particularly in the top levels of sort of CEO, CFO, in turning around a company, you know, that new way of looking at things, or was that just fortuitous in the case of Omnia?
Yeah, I think in any organization, it's important to build bench strength within. You know, my previous roles have been in very old established businesses like Old Mutual, mm-hmm. Liberty, Stanlib, you know, and I think it's important that we create the new way of thinking from within the business. You know, part of what I want to do going forward is to strengthen the bench strength in the company. But I guess it's always good to have complementary skills that come from the outside. You know, you and I, each time we walk into our house and there's a crack, we don't see the crack eventually. You know, we're so used to it. It's only when someone else walks in and says, wow, that crack's widened, that we think, that's not, you know, that needs to be dealt with. So fresh thinking, diversity of thinking, you know, diversity of thought, thinking about different ways of doing things is critical, you know, different risks, managing those risks. So I'm a firm believer that you need to build talent from within the company. You need to have that sort of thinking inside. But, you know, most businesses that I've been part of, you know, have benefited from bringing people from other industries, other sectors. And really, it's just different thinking. You know, if we all think the same, Simon, you know, we don't create magic and create greatness. It's when we think differently, when we challenge each other, when we grapple with the difficult problems we need to solve, and we look at it from all different angles, that's when magic's created. And businesses go from good to great.
I love that. When we think differently, diversity, I agree 100%, hugely important. Omnia CEO, Seelan Gobalsamy, really appreciate your time. Congrats to you and your team, and all the best. It's a long journey going forward. We're still in the middle of a pandemic. It's not easy.
Agreed.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
That's it for today. You'll find the podcast every morning from 7 a.m. at moneyweb.co.za and the MoneyWeb app. And we'll be back live on both of those from Friday at 6:30. Chat to us on social media using the hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.